The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Company, as it always is, serving the community since 1974. Want to talk to them about insurance or thank you for underwriting Our State? Give them a call, 919-781-1973. And now we return one more time to the February 2019 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. We're going to read a couple of articles from the end of the magazine. It's kind of interesting. The theme this month was biscuits, but we're going to read about legendary grit and cornbread. And there's a picture of a cast iron frying pan right here. It says legendary grit right over it. And one piece of the cornbread that was inside is missing, and I wish I had had it. It looks delicious. Ray Wheeler doesn't want to walk through the old grist mill in Selma. The large, red-roofed wooden structure visible from the front porch of his office has a stillness and quiet that doesn't suit this peripatetic salesman and engineer. At 82, he has bright eyes, a quick smile, and a purposeful stride, all the better for a tour of where the real action is. Up the hill and through the modern buildings where cornmeal is stone ground, packed, and shipped to restaurants and stores across the southeast. Besides, he doesn't need to go inside the old Atkinson's mill to remember what it was like when he first arrived as mill operator in 1958, a 22-year-old jack-of-all-trades, 2 years married to Betty. For years, they were the mill's only workers. We raised every baby in the mill house, Ray says, gesturing to show how they'd set their newest infant in a crib, moving the older child to a playpen. Betty, who helped run the mill almost from the beginning, would be back in the job 2 weeks after giving birth. They had six children and now count 17 grandchildren and six great-grandchildren in their family. Betty loved this place as good as I did, he says. We always worked as a team. Betty bagged cornmeal while looking after their children. Ray drove orders from business to business, cornmeal, and maybe a box of corn whiskey in his trunk, and workers mixed seafood breading from 7 a.m. to midnight to keep up with the demand. Atkinson's has operated continuously since 1757, throughout the era when grist mills were the hub of a community. As central to life as church or school, Betty and Ray bought the business in 1971 after 13 years of renting it, but out of respect for the Atkinson family, they never changed the name. Today, it's the only locally owned grist mill in Johnston County, and the Wheelers apply the same exacting standards to the work that they always have, cleaning the corn three times before stone grinding it into a particularly fine, light meal. And Ray still wears a black work shirt embroidered with the name his customers gave him almost six decades ago when he was out on sales calls. Sometimes late at night, sometimes early in the morning. Oh, it's the cornbread man, they'd say as he walked in the door. The moniker, also stitched on his hat, is registered with the state. Not one to boast, he gives a modest nod to the power of a memorable nickname, saying, "That's what built the business." I visit the mill on a warm October day when the sky is that particular brand of gorgeous that arrives after a hurricane, pale blue streaked with high cirrus clouds. Selma didn't see any major damage from Michael, which blew through a few days before, or Florence, which hit a month earlier, but the town is still feeling the effects of 2016's Matthew, which flooded the old mill and forced business operations to higher ground. On Ray's insistence, I brought along my five-month-old daughter, Harriet. I'm curious about how well this will work, reporting while toting a baby. This incorporation of family and professional life, which the Wheelers for generations have taken for granted. Ray's eldest son, Glenn, is president of the company now. His next oldest son, Ben, is vice president. Two grandsons, Joseph and Andrew, work to modernize production. A granddaughter, Misty, works in the mill. Betty, now 80, ran the office until about 10 years ago. In addition to members of the Wheeler family, the company employs more than 60 people who take orders, grind, mix, bake, pack, and ship the products that the cornbread man is known for. While office staff care for Harriet, Ray and I tour the mill facility, frozen food plant, and shipping warehouse, buildings he added as the business prospered. He points out the machinery that he built himself, the cornbread oven that he bought used years ago, the millstones that are more than 100 years old. He shows me the corn stick molds lined up to be filled and baked with the Eastern North Carolina specialty. We walk past pallets stacked with Sweet Betsy, the hush puppy mix inspired by his wife. Atkinson Milling Company makes a wider range of products now. Cornbread, cornbread mix, corn sticks, hush puppies, seafood breading and pastry, as well as cornmeal and grits. But it remains a hands-on team effort. We find a dozen workers in the pastry room, which is noisy with laughter and talk. Ray steps away respectfully when I speak to his employees, so he doesn't hear one young woman say fondly, "That's my grandpa." They admit that he can be a perfectionist, tossing product that doesn't meet his standards. But he also likes to cook for them, all of them, hosting fried chicken picnics and Thanksgiving meals. Today, the women are packing pre-baked corn flatbreads, popular in barbecue restaurants, into tidy white boxes. In another area of the frozen food plant, two men mix great slabs of dough. Years ago, when Ray first introduced this dough, the local women said their young ones wouldn't accept it in their Sunday chicken and pastry. They didn't want it at first, Ray says, explaining that he gave away the first batches. Then those same women came back the next week looking for bigger boxes. It was a delicate balance, expanding the company while preserving the quality of the products long associated with the Atkinson brand. But Ray's mind is the type that bends toward innovation. Though he grew up sopping his cornbread in local cane syrup, he knew there would be an appetite for convenience foods made from favorite traditional recipes. Betty, after all, worked in a shirt mill before their business took off, and when she returned to the corn mill, she was home busy running things while Ray made sales calls across the state. He also knew something else. If you don't give your customers some service, somebody else will. That's why he answered calls even at night, like the one he received one Friday from a restaurant owner who found his phone number on the back of a bag of cornmeal. The customer's hush puppy machine was acting up, and he didn't know how to fix it. "You just go home, go to bed, and when you get there in the morning, I'll be there," Ray told him. Ray kept and still keeps a panel truck outfitted with a bed, bathroom, and an air conditioning unit for his wide-ranging, sometimes spur-of-the-moment sales calls. He arrived at 2:30 a.m., went to bed, and was up, shaved, and ready to help when his customer arrived at work the next day. "He didn't believe it when he saw me," Ray says. The mill is always on his mind, as it's always has been. On stormy nights, Ray would lie in bed, watching the single bare light bulb he'd hung low inside the old building. He knew that if that light went out, it meant the mill was flooding, and he'd better get down there quick. This is why grandson Joseph thinks Ray doesn't want to walk through the old mill house. So many memories, he says. It was everything to him. Ray and Betty can see the original building from their small blue house, which sits on a hill in the center of the mill property. The living room walls are covered in photos and paintings of the mill and its various stages of growth, and dozens of framed photos of the family that has grown with it. Ray has caregivers and family looking after Betty at the house. She sits contentedly at the kitchen table where dinner is spread, spaghetti, meatballs, and a platter of hush puppies. I can't help sneaking one before we've said grace. The hush puppy is still hot, fragrant with onion and corn, and subtly sweet. Two of Betty and Ray's grandchildren sit around the table. Biscuit cutters and whisks, the useful, not decorative kind, hang from hooks on the cabinets. And I think about my mother's kitchen with long seasoned skillets hanging above the stove. The Wheelers have loaded my car with bags of yellow grits and stone ground cornmeal. I'll take some home to bake my own cornbread, slicking cast iron skillet with butter so that the edges bake up gold and crisp, just like Ray's hush puppies. Who am I? Betty asks softly every now and then. You are my baby doll, says Ray, his voice gentle and certain. Harriet coos in my lap. Ray was right about her. She spent the morning happily passed from person to person at the mill, and now she reaches for the table, eyeing the food. Betty pronounces her beautiful and waves at her. She's a little bit young, Ray says, but I've never met a baby that didn't love cornbread and iced tea. That was written by Belle Boggs, who's an associate professor of English at NC State and author of The Art of Waiting and The Gulf. You are, of course, listening to Our State Magazine on the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and if you have any comments about our program, please call studios 919-832-5138. And now, Baking the Bread Curse. In an unassuming strip mall in Kerry, an internationally acclaimed French baker transforms a little yeast, flour, and salt into delicious perfection. And he wants you to learn to do it, too. Really? Lionel Vatinet is asking if I bake bread, which seems to be a simple question, but is potentially a terrible trap. If I believe the hype, this is the equivalent of McCartney asking if I write songs, or LeBron asking if I can drive the lane. And I do believe. Vatinet is a legend in the bread world, a master who teaches hobbyists to be better bakers and coaches professionals like from Zabers, Labre, Panera, and hundreds more around the world to be extraordinary. Jacques Pépin called his 2013 book A Passion for Bread remarkable, praise that would seem hyperbolically silly applied to bread if Vatinet's breads were not, in fact, remarkable. For years, a friend from New York has stopped at Vatinet's La Farm Bakery in Kerry before venturing to my house with a sack full of boules and batards and white chocolate mini baguettes that somehow make me forget that I don't even like white chocolate. So, Vatinet is asking, do you bake bread? Yes, all the time, but that's an embarrassing answer. I've had his bread and I've had my bread. Sort of, I tell him, lowering expectations. My ambition far outpaces my ability. That's okay, he says. What do you bake? Same loaf, over and over, trying to get it right. Still, hit or miss. 540 grams of flour, 1 5/8 cups of water, 2 1/4 teaspoons of yeast. Stop. Right there, you have a problem. You have grams and cups and teaspoons. This is a devastating critique. It's not meant to be. Vatinet is a genial fellow, a natural leader. He's just French. He's been in the United States for almost 3 decades, and he and his wife, Missy, opened La Farme 20 years ago. But he still has the accent. A French accent is gutting. But Vatinet is used to novices, which is to say he's used to people who needlessly complicate a process that involves minimal ingredients and tools. We start with equipment, all of which he has on a wooden table behind La Farm's counters. A scale, a thermometer, a scraper, a stainless steel bowl. The bowl, I suspect, is the key, the catalyst for an alchemy my glass bowls can't conjure. Why steel, I ask? He grabs the bowl, pivots, drops it. It clangs, wobbles, and then settles on the floor. It doesn't break. No alchemy, then. It gives me a bemused side eye. No. We commence to mixing. We weigh flour, measure salt and yeast. There's so little of each, relatively, that Vatinet offers absolution on the use of a measuring spoon. And we weigh water warm to between 82 and 84 degrees. The dry ingredients are swirled together, the water added, the muck massaged, the bowl scraped, then the whole thing is turned out on the table. Vatinet shows me how to pinch through the dough, palms up, thumb and forefingers snapping like a crab. He starts at one end, pinches to the other, scrapes the dough from the counter, turns it 90 degrees, repeats. You work with the flour, he says while pinching, not in the flour, because the flour is your friend, but it can very quickly become your enemy. He does the pinch thing five or six times, then begins folding the dough onto itself. End up and over, quarter turn up and over. His shaggy mix of flour and water is transmogrified into a ball, smooth and taut and barely tacky, which he shows me how to check with the back of my hand. This entire process has taken approximately 6 minutes, eight tops. Now you, he says. I pinch awkwardly, slowly, downright laboriously. The flour does not appear to be my friend. My folding is worse. I lift too slowly, pull too hard. My quarter turn is a half turn with a full twist. Long minutes pass. Who is the boss of the dough? Vatinet asks. Wait, what? I thought it was supposed to be my friend. You are the boss of the dough. It's a very generous sentiment, but no, I am not the boss of my dough. There was a time, possibly, when Vatinet was not the boss of his dough either, but that would have been decades ago when he was a teenager in France. At 16, he knew that continuing to university would not be the best use of his time. For me, he says, school was a playground. So he sampled the trades. A few days of plumbing, a couple with an electrician, a mechanic. None of those really appealed. Then one day I walked into a neighborhood bakery, he says, and something happened. What? He can't quite name, because really, how does one deconstruct an epiphany? The only visceral memory is the smell, which is as good a reason as any. Not long after, he was accepted into Les Compagnons du Devoir, an ancient guild of master craftsmen, the guiding philosophy of which is that the old teach the young in an endless chain, traditions and techniques passed on through centuries. The baking trench of the guild dates only to the 1600s, making it a relative latecomer. For 7 years, Vatinet baked with the master bakers until he himself was anointed a maître boulanger. His masterpiece, the guild equivalent of a doctoral thesis, was a 5-pound boule, which he still bakes every day as his signature La Femme bread. He traveled after his training, baking in Martinique and London, New Zealand and Mexico, Washington, D.C., and Vancouver, Atlanta, and Fort Collins. In 1996, he joined the new San Francisco Baking Institute, helping develop curriculum. A year later, at a trade show in Chicago, he met Missy. They opened their own bakery 2 years later in Cary, which, at first blush, seems an odd choice for a French master with an international reputation for artisanal bread. But Missy, the entrepreneurial half of their partnership, grew up in Roanoke, Virginia, and she remembered the demographics of the area when her uncle worked for IBM. Educated, relatively affluent, with a fair number of international transplants who would be used to bake or used to bread, who would be used to bread as a daily commodity as opposed to a factory loaf. The couple took over an old birdseed store, 2,000 square feet of retail only, and quickly developed a following for their exquisite breads, 9 varieties, including cinnamon rolls. 10 years later, they expanded into the dry cleaner next door and opened a cafe, then expanded some more into the old ABC store in 2017. It's a charming space, cozy without being cramped, with a menu of salads and soups, tartines and quiches, and, of course, sandwiches. It's a fiercely local place, too. La Farm uses North Carolina-grown and milled grains and serves only Durham's counterculture coffee, both of Kerry, and yet a respite from it. A Parisian cafe burrowed into a strip mall next to a nail salon. When people come in, what we hope is that it transports them in the 5 or 20 or 30 minutes they're here, Vatanay says. Whatever problems they have out there, we want them to forget them here. I'm having problems. Vatanay sent me home with our dough in plastic bags and told me to leave them in the refrigerator, then shape and bake them in the morning. Except they won't bake. They won't shape, rather. He'd shown me how to form a boule, the most basic round loaf, but I've struggled to get a cohesive lump. The mild tack of yesterday has been replaced by a tenacious stickiness. I abandon the boule, open the second bag, cut it into 8 pieces to form rolls, which he also demonstrated. Thumb and forefinger on the work surface, no downward pressure, swirl beneath the palm in a tight, satiny globe. I swirl, small, sticky lumps. The dough must be flawed. Maybe it's too cold, or the refrigerator wasn't cold enough and it overproofed. I decide to start from scratch, use the most basic recipe from A Passion for Bread, and try to remember what Vatanay told me. I weigh my ingredients for his country French bread, the flour, yeast, and salt, and then I warm my water to just over 82 degrees. I commence to mixing and scraping. Something is wrong. My dough is distressingly dry. It flops onto my cutting board with a small puff of flour. I arrange my hands in Vatanay's awkward pinching position, crab through the mass once, turn, repeat. My dry mass comes together quickly. I'm pleasantly surprised. And then, a third time through, it's suddenly unworkably wet. I mutter something unpleasant, and my wife slips out of the kitchen. I can hear her in the living room. Be nice to Dad, she's telling the boys. He's trying out some new dough, and, well, it's not going well. I turn the page with my nose because my fingers are too messy. Top of page 76. Stick with it. You can do it. Ah, the semicolon, the least confident of all punctuation marks. But I remember what Vatanay said. No, insisted the day before. Who is the boss of the dough? I fold, scrape, lift, turn, repeat. The results are unimpressive. Again and again. By the 5th time through, it's beginning to hold a shape. By the 10th, it's roughly a ball. I give it 3 more folds for good measure, and then take its temperature, 76.4 degrees, right in the middle of the specified 72 to 80 degrees. I put it in a glass bowl, and it doubles in size in an hour, as prophesied on page 77. I turn it out. Gently press it into a rectangle, then backtrack to page 56, where shaping a boule is illustrated in photos. I follow them precisely. My dough is in a tight ball. I am the boss of my dough. I slash a quick hash mark on the top, opening slits in my surprisingly round loaf, then slide it into a hot baking stone in the oven. Normally, I throw a half cup of water into a sizzling pan on the lowest rack to create steam. Also, normally, I would have used twice as much yeast and let the mixer knead until I guessed it had gone on long enough, so I'm skipping normal. Instead, I use what Vatanay claims is a foolproof technique for home ovens, a steel bowl inverted over the loaf, a dome to hold in moisture for the first 10 minutes of baking. A half hour later, the interior of the hash mark is golden brown, a signal Vatanay says that the bread is done. I check the temperature just in case, 210 degrees. Perfect. It is, in fact, the most perfect loaf of bread I have ever baked. Assuming this is a complete fluke, I mix another batch of dough and form rolls, then another for a batard, and then a baguette I overproofed, which is a triumph in itself that I know it was overproofed. Another bowl. focaccia with herbs and salt. Finally, those white chocolate mini baguettes. I have no secrets, Bathinet writes in his book. My goal as a baker has been to demystify baking for professional and home bakers and to mentor as many as I can so that everyone can enjoy high-quality, handcrafted breads, all of which he accomplished with me in 2 hours and one remarkable book. At first I'm astonished, then giddy, then confident. 6 days after I clumsily pinched through dough in the back of La Farm, I am in the kitchen with my son Emmett. He's 11. I show him how to pinch, how to fold and scrape, how to form a roll. He's a quicker learner than I am, and his first creations are soon on the Thanksgiving table, golden and round. There is no mystery anymore, but still it seems magical. Written by Sean Flynn, an award-winning journalist, author, and correspondent for GQ magazine. La Farm Bakery is at 4248 Northwest Cary Parkway, in Cary, of course, lafarmbakery.com. Now we'll close out with this brief article called The Watershed, MG3 Farms' hand-built hydroponic greenhouse offers a warm place for plants to flourish during winter's freeze. The greenhouse feels futurist. Rows of great green plants sit stacked on top of each other, sprouting out of the white pipes that zigzag across the narrow building. Spaceship aesthetics aside, hydroponic farming is very much an innovation of the present. No soil necessary, just a seed planted into a sterile foam cube. Sunshine and steady stream of nutrient-rich water do the rest. Roderick McMillan, the 27-year-old creator of MG3 Farms in Prospect, says the plants never want for anything. The results are beautiful. Glossy strawberry leaves float over the aisles. The curly oak leaf lettuce blooms in bunches as soft as suede. McMillan comes from a family of traditional farmers going back 4 generations. He's always enjoyed working in agriculture, but he wanted to try something new. He was drawn to the cleanliness and efficiency of hydroponics, which created a difference in quality that people can really taste, McMillan says. So he converted an old tobacco transplant greenhouse into a hydroponic greenhouse by watching YouTube videos and enlisting aid from his family. Going on its 3rd year, the greenhouse cuts a distinctive figure among the fields of corn, wheat, and soybeans on the McMillan family farm in Robeson County. Heated in the winter and cooled in the summer, the greenhouse grows lettuce, herbs, tomatoes, strawberries, and cabbage year-round, producing fresh and flavorful greens even when the ground outside is dusted with snow. They're at 496 Missouri Road in Maxton, North Carolina. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. Questions, comments? Call the studios, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.